It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, community art projects are popular across the state. We will try to understand what community art can do for the people involved in the projects and what it can do for the communities that surround those people. We'll find out about a number of different community art projects, and we also want to hear from you. What community art projects have you been involved in? What do you think the value is? You can join the conversation at Talk of Iowa at iowapublicradio.org. And my first guest today is Jennifer Drinkwater. She's an assistant professor of art and visual culture at Iowa State University. She's a painter, and she holds a newish position with Iowa State University Extension as the Community Art Extension Specialist. Hello, Jennifer.
Hey, Charity. It's great to be with you.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And first, help us understand, what is the Community Art Extension Specialist? What is your mission?
That's a great question. It's a new position. I started July 1st, and what I tell people is I work with communities across the state to help them use art as a means or a strategy to improve economic and community development in their area.
And what do you think spurred the creation of this position? Because I know that a lot of positions in extension have been cut over the years. Was there some sort of need that made this one something to invest in?
Well, Iowa State, I think, is a perfect place for this position to have been established. We are a land-grant university, and so a huge part of our mission is community outreach, obviously, and we have extension offices in every county in the state, and so those serve as a bridge between the resources and research that's happening on campus and the expertise and the needs in communities. Iowa State also has one of the largest public art collections in the nation on any university campus, and so there's a really strong commitment at Iowa State to the power of art in public places. And then the College of Design, where I'm housed, is a really wonderful interdisciplinary college with departments, architecture, landscape architecture, industrial design. There's a whole range of different areas that we all work in collaboratively. And so it seemed like a great fit. It's sort of a using art to help problem solve.
Now, as we talk about community art, I think that there are so many different things that fall under that umbrella. Is there a definition that you use to decide whether something fits under the umbrella?
It really can be anything, and I think that's what's so exciting about it. And so maybe it's better to think about adjectives or ways to describe it. And so I like to think of it as collaborative, co-creative, so you're working with communities, inclusive, and it's often public.
I want to use a specific example, and we're going to talk more about people involved in this project in just a moment. But let's talk about the Latino Migration Cultural Project, which is taking place in many places, but in Perry, Iowa, right now. Can you tell me a little bit about the community art project that is part of that?
Sure. Perry is actually working with Humanities Iowa and was awarded a grant from the American Library Association to bring in Latino Americans, 500 Years of Migration, which is a PBS documentary, to their community. And in doing so, they needed to develop six different cultural projects to support the program. And so they're having public speakers come, they're having progressive dinner, they're creating a mobile lab to record oral histories of Latino community members who have moved to Perry. And what I'm helping to work on is the design and creation of a mural that's going to depict those oral histories.
All right. And as you're collecting these oral histories, tell me just a little bit about the people that you're collecting them from and what makes this community unique.
Sure. Well, I'm actually working with Extension Field Specialist John Wolseth and Rosa Gonzalez, and they are actually collecting the stories. And so they will start that process this fall. And then I will be sort of sifting through the stories and maybe sitting in on some of the interviews to kind of get imagery ideas. The city of Perry has also been really generous. They have allowed me to have an open studio space right in their downtown area. So it's an empty storefront that I will be housed in every Friday starting in November throughout the year. And I'll have areas set up for people to come in and talk and to draw and to sort of share their stories and their ideas for the mural.
Exciting. Well, let's turn now to Rosa Gonzalez. As you mentioned, she's part of this project. She is a family life specialist with Iowa State University Extension. She lives in Perry. She's very involved with the Latino Migration Cultural Project. And Rosa, you came to Iowa and to Perry about 20 years ago. What brought you to the state?
Well, as I will identify with many other Latino families, the reason I came to Iowa was mainly job opportunities.
What was it like when you came? Did you feel comfortable in the community?
Well, you know, the first impression for me, I came in during the summer. Then, of course, the place was beautiful for me. I was really glad to be in a place that looks beautiful, all green and a little bit hot, but it was really nice. Now, in the community, of course, I never thought about the barriers that I will be experiencing. And a little bit hard just because I was not able to speak the language.
Now, obviously, you learned English and now you work with Iowa State University Extension. You've been in Perry for a long time and are clearly a part of the community. What does it mean for you and other members of the Latino community in Perry to have this project as a way to express your heritage and your role in the community?
Well, you know, this has become very meaningful for me and for many other Latino members. You come to this country and to some communities feeling as a stranger, a feeling as a person that you don't belong, and but still trying to make it work and communicate with others that this has become now your home, and you want to provide and support in any way you can. It's part of showing others that you feel proud for who you are and for where you came from, and you want to share those feelings, then this project is going to become a way that not just me, but many of the Latino community members will share who they are, and the goods and the hard things that involves to become a new member in a new community that is so different to yours. Then we hope that this project can project that and that people have a better understanding and also, why not, appreciation for these new members. Yeah.
Now, of course, as communities come together, new groups in a community, our children bring us together. Food often brings us together. Do you feel like art can also be a bridge for this cultural divide?
Definitely, definitely. You know, when you see a piece of art, and this is this will be a piece that for many will be easy to understand, then, of course, it will bring people together just because I'm guessing a lot of people will be interested in see what this mural means and what try to project and what try to say to others. And in a really nice and peaceful way. I hope that open the doors or open new opportunities for more conversations and dialogues that can bring more close together the members in the community and people who come and see the work.
Do you find that as you're talking to other members of the Latino population in Perry, are some people surprised about this project that's going to be part of the town?
Well, you know, probably for some, that might be a surprise just because 20 years had to happen in order to happen something like this. But at the same time, I think that they will be really happy to actually have a piece that can represent our own stories in this community.
Rosa, thank you so much for talking with me.
You're welcome.
Rosa Gonzalez is a family life specialist with Iowa State University Extension. She's very involved with the Latino Migration Cultural Project in Perry. And Jennifer, before we get to the break, I want to ask you, in investing in this art project in Perry, with collecting all of the stories and turning it into a mural that really tells the story of the Latino population in Perry, what do you think that can really accomplish for the community?
Well, John and Rosa and I are planning for each step of the process to be as inclusive and participatory as possible. And so having the open studio every week hopefully will invite people to come in and give their feedback and help design. We're also planning to host some sort of potluck in the spring where we have the community vote on different design iterations that the mural would take. So it would be their voice. And finally, we hope to include people in the actually painting of the mural in order to have them invest and to feel like they're a part of the project. And so in doing that, we hope that bridges are built.
And with painting, are we just talking about people in the Latino community or anyone in Perry?
Anyone in Perry could get involved.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. This hour, we're talking about community art projects. And with me right now, Jennifer Drinkwater. She's an assistant professor of art and visual culture at Iowa State University. And she also is the community art extension specialist with Iowa State University Extension. We also want to hear from you this hour. Tell us about the community art projects you've been involved with and what you think their value is. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about community art projects. We're going to take a look at a number of different community art projects around the state this hour. You can also join the conversation. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also give us a call, 866-780-9100. With me is Jennifer Drinkwater. She's an assistant professor of art and visual culture at Iowa State University. She's also a painter. And she is the community art extension specialist with Iowa State University Extension. And Jennifer, as an artist yourself, was there a moment when you came to understand public art or want to be involved in public art? I can imagine that it's a different feeling of creation than just making art on your own.
It is. And I think it's been sort of a natural progression. I have an undergraduate degree in anthropology and so and an undergraduate degree in art. And so I think I've always sort of looked at art as a reflection of our culture and our cultural values and always seen it as having potential to help improve community and change things. A project that I did about 3 years ago was a large scale collaborative painting project. And I painted smaller representations of the Grant Wood mural series that's found on Iowa State Campus Park Library. They were painted on steel so they could be magnetic. And so I created lots of magnets, but also had community members come in for open studios every Friday on campus to help create magnets. And so by the end of the semester, we had, I think, over 400 magnets for this collection. And so it was really, I found it incredibly fulfilling to be able to work in a studio with other people making things for one project. It was really wonderful.
I want to get to a couple of calls before we start exploring some of the art projects that we've arranged to talk about this hour. We have a lot of people who want to join this conversation. And TB is on the line from Ames. Hello, TB.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Hi,
now, you are very involved in public art in Ames. Tell me what you do.
So, yeah, I'm involved in this artist group called AIMSCART, which stands for Community Art. And we are a group of artists living here in Ames, three of us, and we are organizing various projects and exhibitions throughout the city. We have a couple of longer-running activities. One is Pop-Up Ames, and that's kind of a one-night-only exhibition where anyone in the community can enter a piece of art, a painting, or whatever. And there's an opening slash party at the end of the day, and it's a great opportunity for people to kind of meet each other. And we've had lots of people that have participated for the very first time in exhibitions. We've also had people that are very well-established artists, you know, like they have solo shows at the Des Moines Art Center.
Well, in,
so that's one type of activity that we do.
Are you finding that as you continue to do these pop-up shows, are more and more people getting involved?
I think so. And, you know, like they get more kind of well-established. People know about them. They know that in December they should kind of expect this. And they're looking forward to that. I've heard lots of people, you know, already starting to ask, when are you going to have the pop-up show in December? Where is it going to be? And, you know, all these things.
What do you hope to accomplish with those pop-up shows?
Well, first off, it's kind of a way of building community, you know, because you're going to have so many different types of artists working in so many different media in one place for one night only. And they will interact with each other, and they will get to know each other, and they will get to know much more about their work. I got to know a lot of people, you know, through these exhibitions. And who knows what's going to develop from there? They might work together. They might have some ideas for different shows. There's already a different group that kind of organizes something relatively similar, but they've extended to poetry and music. So we are kind of hoping to create conditions for this kind of development, you know, within the community, and kind of create a bit of a sense of a community here in Ames.
Well, TB, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing your experiences with us. We have a lot of other people who want to share their experiences as well this hour. And you can join the conversation, Talk of Iowa, at iowapublicradio.org. I want to turn to a case study, again, in Perry. We were talking earlier about the Latino Migration Cultural Project in Perry. But there have been a number of powerful community art projects in Perry over time. And with me now is Butch Niebuhr. He's a longtime city administrator in Perry. Now he's retired. Hello, Butch.
Hello. How are you doing, Charity?
Good. Thank you so much for being
here
today.
Butch.
Hi, Jennifer.
And Jenny Eklund is also here with us. She's an artist from Perry, and she's the co-founder of Art on the Prairie, a yearly art festival in Perry, as well as La Poste, an arts and music venue set in the old post office. Hello, Jenny.
Hello, girls. How you doing?
Hey, Jenny.
Hey, Jennifer.
Well, I'd like to start with you, Butch. You have worked with Jennifer on a few projects. You've worked with Jenny on a few projects. As someone involved in city administration, has it ever been a hard sell to try to say, you know what, we should invest in arts. We should invest our time. We should invest our money.
Well, I was real fortunate when I was city administrator for the city of Perry. Our mayor at the time, Vivi Shirley, and now Jay Patti are both very supportive of the arts. And also Jenny Eklund here was a council member for quite a while. So our council was full of artists and people that appreciated the arts and educators. So it was really not a hard sell on the administrative part side of it.
Was it ever a hard sell to you? What convinced you?
Well, definitely I'm not an artist. I'll say that. Yeah, and I get a laugh from Jenny. But So not for me at all, because it does bring to our downtown, especially looking at art anywhere in our town, but in the downtown, especially in our intersection with the Raccoon River Valley Trail and our businesses. We've got a beautiful downtown. We've got 30-some buildings on the historic registry, the beautiful Hotel Patti and other buildings that the Amundsens had refurbished, our Carnegie Library. So having those buildings and those attractions that we had in the downtown, To be able to talk to administration about bringing art to the downtown just went right along with that. It was something that the natural place for us to go.
Can public art boost the economy in a community?
Oh, I think so, especially in our case with the Hotel Pat T, and of course now Jay and Denise Hartz that took that over and just starting their third year. A lot of the comments that we got when people came to this grand hotel was, okay, you got them to the hotel, now what would they do? You know, now what's to do in Perry? The art is a big deal. There's a lot of art in the hotel, and then with the development of the Sumas Court, a lot of artwork there done by David Dahlquist and the Arthur Paley arches in there. So to give these people that would come to the hotel and come to a quaint hotel like this, the art is just an easy place for it to go, for to be able to bring them into the downtown, and then it brings you into the retail sector of the downtown and gets them into your shops. It creates shops in the downtown that deal with historic or antiques or just art, whimsical things. It really worked well.
Well, Jenny, let me ask you. I know that you're one of the co-founders of Art on the Prairie, which is a yearly art festival in Perry, now celebrating its sixth year. Was this an effort to put Perry kind of on the map as a place where artists go? Because I know Perry hasn't always had that reputation.
No, I can't say it was an effort so much as a dream. Mary Rose Nichols, who's our mentor, I call her our community saint, she came to me about 7 years ago because I was working with the chamber in creating our Friday Fest. And she wanted to know if there was a way that we could incorporate art into that. So we went into winter. We sat down. We talked about it. And then we created the Art on the Prairie Art Festival. When we started that 6 years ago, we had three buildings and about 35 artists. And people were coming to our community saying, what gorgeous buildings you have here. We didn't realize Perry was just, you know, this beautiful. And at the end of that art show, we thought it was a huge success. You know, we had about 1,500 people. We were dancing on the moon. Well, last year for our fifth Art on the Prairie, we had it in seven buildings, over 100 artists, musicians, poets, and we have all these beautiful buildings that we're showing, and we've had about 6,000 people come to our community because of the arts. Once they get there, the big question I'm hearing, also tied in with La Poste, is, Jenny, can you help us find a place to live? We love Perry. This, you know, whether that's to rent or to buy a home. And I never expected those comments to come our way, but it all came because of art.
Well, and tell me a little bit about La Poste. I know it's an old post office, but tell me about the space.
I'm so glad you're letting me talk about that. La Poste was a building, the post office built in 1913, and then the school administration office took it over in the 60s when the post office moved to their new location. About three and a half years ago, Mary Rose Nichols, my mentor, said, Jenny, what do you think about that building? And I'm like, I don't have too many thoughts. She was worried about a wrecking ball getting it, and she goes, would you like to buy it? I said, Mary, we don't have any money. How are we going to do that? Well, it went up for bid, and that's a whole nother story. But to get to the point is we were able to buy the building for just a little bit of money, find a bank who believed in our dream, and the goal was art, music, social gathering. That was the goal for La Poste. We brought it back to life, and it has turned into the art hub, I feel, of Dallas County. Every month we feature a new artist. We have music. It's just, and of course it's being booked for weddings and conferences, meetings. Never thought this would happen, and it has just snowballed into one of the bright spots of Perry.
You know, Butch, it sounds like, and Jenny is reinforcing this, I mean, Perry has, it's a community with good bones, you know, some really beautiful buildings that have been able to be enhanced and showcased in some new ways. Do you feel like beautification of the city, an investment in art, does that change how people approach the city and how they treat the buildings that, that they're involved in.
Yeah, and one thing interesting with that charity is when the city, we actually purchased where City Hall is now, and we share that building with the school administration and with the Chamber of Commerce. And then we purchased that building from the Amundsens when they closed out ownership of the Hotel Patti and a couple other buildings they owned. The Amundsens also donated the Carnegie Library, which is, I think, the finest restored Carnegie Library in the nation. And then another building, the First National Bank building, which we call the Towncraft Center. And this is where we have a studio for students, visiting students, the design lab at Iowa State. But kind of what I'm getting to is the ability to have these buildings given to us in pristine shape and actually sold to us at a lower cost. What the city did by council passing a resolution is we give back to the community by renting these buildings out to anybody in the community at a very low cost. So actually when Jenny and Mary came to the city and wanted to use these buildings for the Art on the Prairie the first time, it was a natural. The Amundsens still have some of their artwork in some of the buildings, and then some of the artwork went with the building. So there's a lot of things to see in these buildings. It's beautiful buildings, and they just add to the downtown, and everybody then takes pride. So you see things going on in the downtown that you may not have seen before. Our mayor now, Jay and Jan Patti, his wife Jan, they own Ben's Five and Dime, and they put high-end apartment buildings up above. They've got seven apartment buildings, and they actually moved up there themselves in the downtown. We also have the Nudgers, a group working on buildings in the downtown. They just refurbished a building that our newspaper just moved into, and they've got four apartments, one-bedroom apartments, that are ready to go, hopefully for young artists or old artists, anybody that would want to live in a downtown area, and at affordable price, and be in an area which we think now will be a cultural district and an arts and cultural district. So we're real excited about that happening.
I want to get back to the phones. Jason is on the line from New Hampton. Hi, Jason.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, and you were involved in a community art project in Cedar Falls a couple of years ago. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, I was with Green Iowa AmeriCorps, and I was a skateboarder. I guess maybe still am. There was a big skate park made of metal that was just rusting away. It was covered in graffiti. So there was a swastika, I think some racial slurs. The whole thing was just really falling apart, and it wasn't a pleasant place to be. And I organized a mural project with the Cedar Falls City Parks Department, and Diamond Vogel Paint, I guess, supplied the paint. And I just made it an open call for any artists, any skateboarders to come and paint. And just had an amazing turnout. A lot of people showed up. There were some local artists who kind of wanted to get their name out there, and they showed up to do murals on the ramps. And it's still there today, probably 4 years later, I think. So I just wanted to kind of share that story. I thought it tied in.
Yeah, absolutely. Jason, thank you so much for sharing this. And Jennifer, I want to turn to you. In Jason's case, it sounds like this investment in community art got a lot more people involved and invested mm-hmm. in what was a terrible eyesore before that and really created this sense of pride. Is that something that you often see with community art projects?
Absolutely. I think that as soon as you get people invested and people actually participating and making together, there's ownership. You know, people get excited about it. They want to help contribute and to make their communities better.
And Butch, have you seen that as well in Perry?
Oh, yeah. And especially with some of the work that we've done with Jennifer, we did a project here a couple of years ago, the Steamroller Art. And it was interesting to see. We did that the same day as there was a bike ride, and we did it at the trailhead of the Raccoon River Valley Trail in Perry. And she brought a bunch of students from Iowa State. But the next thing you know, the bike riders were involved. People, citizens were coming up to see what was going on. And it was real interesting, since Jennifer's here, to see our public works director. He was driving the roller, not really a steamroller, a small compactor, but he gave a lesson to Jennifer so she could actually press something that day. So,
oh, that's great. So, Jennifer, you're teaching people to paint and engage in art, and then you're also getting to practical education yourself.
Totally. I felt super cool that day.
Well, thank you all so much for being here today. Butch Niebuhr, a longtime city administrator in Perry, now retired. Thank you, Butch.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Jenny Eklund is an artist from Perry and co-founder of Art on the Prairie, a yearly art festival in Perry, as well as La Poste, an arts and music venue set in the old post office. Jenny, thank you.
Thank you.
And Jennifer Drinkwater is the Community Art Extension Specialist at Iowa State University Extension. She's also an assistant professor of art and visual culture at Iowa State University. Jennifer, thank you for being here today.
I loved being here. Thanks.
We're going to continue talking about community art and talking about a few different community art projects around the state. You are welcome to join the conversation, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about community art. And with me now is Tom Stancliffe. He's a professor of art at the University of Northern Iowa. He's also a sculptor, and he leads UNI's Public Art Incubator. Tom, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Charity.
And Tom, I think when we think about public art, as we've been talking about it for the last 30 minutes or so, we've been talking a lot about events that bring people together or large-scale mural projects. You, as a sculptor, have some of your art on display in communities, and that's a very traditional kind of public art, having a sculpture that people see and they interact with. What do you think having public sculpture, art on display, does for a community?
Well, it becomes part of the sort of the built environment, in the sense, I think it's kind of interesting when you look at it in a kind of a historical sense, and you know, throughout Europe and also parts of the United States, especially more east. But there's a lot of insertion of art into the built environment, whether that's extensions of architecture or fountains or whatever. But there's it becomes a kind of place. I think is what differentiates it from festivals and so forth, that it takes on its own presence and its own meaning to a community over a period of time. So the permanence of it and the placement of it, and especially well-placed public art, punctuates that built environment in ways that gives people a kind of a touchstone to other things, that it might recall certain aspects of the community or values of the community or events that had happened or commemorated, things that have taken place. And it becomes that the permanence of it and the persistence of it in that space becomes this kind of reminder of things and what a community has been and where it's going and so forth. So it functions very differently than more temporary kinds of projects like festivals or so forth. It can be much the same with murals. You know, I mean, a mural can function
right.
much the same way.
Well, when I think about large sculptures that are parts of communities, I also think about the fact that people always seem to want to touch them,
right,
and to interact them with in a very tactile way.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that that's a part of the power of sculpture?
I do. It's a thing. You know, I think that makes it become different. You know. Murals and so forth, a lot of times, I mean, it's an image and you sort of read it. But the idea that it's a thing that it has, that I like to sort of think about it as something that casts a shadow on the earth. It's a thing that people want to interact with. And it, I think in its best, it doesn't serve another function in a sense. It's not, I mean, you can touch benches or the sides of buildings or whatever else might be in the built environment. But this is a thing that's trying to express something, or for somebody, they project even a meaning or extract a meaning from it that's maybe uniquely from their own perspective. But the idea that you can touch it is sort of important. It's a kind of a human quality, I think, to want to connect to things in a direct way. And I think public sculpture can do that.
In Iowa, as in many places, there is a certain percentage of the funding that goes into a public building
right. That
has to be set aside for art. It's not a big percentage, 0.5% of the budget. But why do you think that's important?
I think it's you know, just in a general way, it's a way of the state government supporting the arts. I mean, certainly it provides a vehicle to do that. But it also becomes that kind of human interface on something. Building projects, public access state building projects, are often very large projects. It's a building on a university campus, or it's you know, government building of some kind. And they're very large projects, and they're sort of big things, right? So the idea of taking something and bringing it down to a human level, like some element of the building or some aspect of it, and maybe it's even incorporated maybe directly into the building, but it becomes that sort of human-scaled interface between the sort of the bigness of the architecture and the human experience of entering the building or being outside of the building or seeing, you know, some kind of interesting graphics or something that are embedded into the floor design that begin to kind of describe the space or describe the experience in another way that the architecture itself can't do. And so I think it's important to do that. I think otherwise it's possible for our built environment to become in some ways kind of sterile. And so I think the art is kind of key often to that experience.
I mentioned that you are the leader of UNI's Public Art Incubator.
Right.
Tell me what the mission of the incubator is.
Well, it's a space. We have a great facility, right? We have all of this equipment, and I have almost 40 years of experience building public sculpture. So I always thought it was this important to have this space available for, you know, I was, of course, initially thinking of students, you know, wanting to sort of start careers. But I also thought about it as something that any artist might want to use this great facility. Why should it sometimes sit over the course of the summer or something and be kind of unused? So one of the things about public art, especially about public sculpture, is that an awful lot of people are interested in it. They want the dialogue, things that Jennifer was talking about earlier in the program about the idea of a kind of a collaboration or the inclusiveness of it. There's a lot of desire that artists have to become, to have a voice in the shaping of the kind of the visual landscape out there, literally the visual landscape, and also to engage in that dialogue. And so the thing about sculpture is that it's difficult. Someone has to make it, right? It has to be made well. It has to endure the elements. Even a temporary artwork has to be made well and made safely and do what it needs to do to kind of express its content. So a lot of artists don't have that infrastructure. They don't have that studio space that's large enough. They may not have that equipment. They may not even have that expertise to really fully realize that vision that they have. So what the incubator does is provide that infrastructure that enables people to do things that they might not otherwise be able to do. And I think that's where a lot of times things break down a bit for an artist. It's great, and some of your previous speakers were talking about the idea of the kind of collaboration and the inclusiveness and the sort of the process of public art, the conceptualizing, the working with community members, the gathering of stories and so forth. But at some point, something has to be realized, something has to be made. And so, especially with public sculpture, then how do you get to that point? You know, how can it happen? And so there is often a breakdown in the public art process where the artist as facilitator and kind of visionary becomes disconnected from the actual process of making. The artwork has to be turned over, or the design has to be turned over to someone else, an external fabricator or some kind or something else, and the artist as maker kind of gets pushed into the background. So I believe that the process of being a maker is part and parcel of being an artist, and I think that the incubator can allow that to happen. You know, it allows that for that sort of direct hands-on continuation of the vision all the way through to the final product.
I'm talking with Tom Sandcliff, professor of art at the University of Northern Iowa. He leads UNI's Public Art Incubator. And I want to bring Thomas Agrin into the conversation. He's an artist who lives in Iowa City. He's been involved with the Iowa City Downtown Bench Project and also painted the huge murals on the new Pioneer Co-op buildings in Iowa City and Cedar Rapids celebrating local foods. Hello, Thomas.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, you bet.
Well, and Thomas, as I was talking to Tom about giving artists an opportunity, giving them the space to actually make their art and bring it to fruition, and it strikes me that some of the projects that you've been involved with, the fact that they are public art projects, gives you that space. Is public art sort of an area where an artist can get their foot in the door a little bit?
Sure, I definitely think so. You know, I think it's not necessarily a solution for every artist, you know, in terms of their kind of portfolio of income or whatever. But for me, it's been a really nice way to kind of get out of the studio and have these really big projects that fill a lot of time and stuff. And so, you know, they've been really good for me, and I've really, really enjoyed that public aspect of it. For sure, it's an important part of kind of my how I'm making a living as an artist here. So.
Well, and Thomas, the Iowa City Benchmark Project, so these are our benches downtown that different artists can paint. And this is one of those projects, and not quite like Herkion Parade and Cyclone City, but these are projects where there's art that a lot of people get to see. And you also hear quite a bit of criticism about it. You know, not everybody's going to love every bench. Some people don't love the Herkies or the size at all, although a lot of people love to take their pictures with them. Even if it's a project that's not sort of universally embraced and loved, what is the value of that conversation?
Well, I mean, just the fact that it is a conversation and it is a conversation happening about art, I think that's a really great thing to have, you know, and a really nice thing about these benches, of course, is versus like a large sculptural installation, whatever. The dialogue, the conversation happens really quickly, and it happens just over a short period of time. So if you really don't like it, you don't have to live with it forever. And if you really like it, then you can kind of, you know, you get to enjoy it for that amount of time, and you get to have a conversation about it. And, you know, that's really what's most important, is that conversation. It's nice when things last for a really long time, but there certainly is a benefit, I think, especially, you know, when there's maybe a lot of, like, public funding coming into a piece of public art. You know, not everyone agrees on how they think their own tax dollars should be spent. So, you know, the conversation is good, I think, whatever it is, just like anything. So.
Well, and before I let you go, Thomas, I also want to ask you, I mentioned that you were involved in painting the murals for New Pioneer Co-op, mm-hmm. and you feel that there can be a lot of power in painting these images, a lot of power for the local foods movement. What do you think that images like the ones that you've painted can do for that movement?
I guess I think of that all the local food movement as something more than just, you know, whether you're buying an organic head of broccoli at the grocery store. And you know, I've worked on a lot of farms and organic farms in this area, and so it's an issue that's really close to me. It's an issue that has to do with more, you know, more than just has your food been sprayed with something, or has it come from California. It's all kinds of really complex issue that has to do with, you know, where the money in our economy is going and how we treat workers and all of that sort of stuff. And so I think that the more that we can kind of bring that conversation out into the public and out of, you know, really specific niche communities, then the more chance there is that people will really talk about it in a more global sense, I guess, if that makes sense.
Well, Thomas, thank you for being here today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Thomas Agrin is an artist living in Iowa City. He's been involved with the Iowa City Downtown Bench Project and painting murals at New Pioneer Co-op. Also with me, Tom Stancliffe, professor of art at the University of Northern Iowa. And I brought him bring Molly Wright out into the conversation now. She's a writer, and she's also the co-director of the Grin City Collective in Grinnell, which is an artist's collective. And Molly, maybe you can tell us a little bit more about what the Grin City Collective is, what the mission is. Quickly, I'm sorry, we're short on time.
Sure, good morning. Well, Grin City is a collaborative artist organization. We were founded in 2006 by artist Joe Lucina, and for about 10 years we've hosted an artist residency and a community engagement program where we welcome 40 artists, writers, performers each year. Our group does quite a bit of public art work with these artists that come in. And for us, like what Thomas was saying, it's all about conversation, using art as a conversation starter. And what those conversations are is different with every project we do, be it local foods or bullying or literacy or simply telling the stories of Iowa.
Well, and when Grin City Collective started, I mean, it was a place for artists to live and create and collaborate. But you have gone through a bit of a mission change to want to be more focused on community art and public art and outreach. Why that change? Why is that important?
I think we found for two reasons. One, Joe and I as co-directors saw that that was where our personal interests were, in really connecting with the communities where we made our home. But it was also what the community wanted. They were not interested in supporting artists to come and work in their studio on their own project and then leave and go back to New York or Finland or wherever without any real impact on their community. And when you have so many other wonderful projects in a community vying for money and funds, it's hard to compete with that unless you are really showing that you are having an impact. And we wanted to have an impact as well and wanted to revitalize our communities. And both in Grinnell and beyond, we've gone and done projects from Knoxville to Cedar Falls, and so we really kind of expand throughout Iowa trying to bring different types of art to often rural communities.
And does it change you as an artist to interact with different communities and reach out in that way?
Absolutely. I mean, as a writer, I am constantly collecting stories to use in my work, which then I return to these communities in when I am doing public art work as a writer myself. And so I feel like I myself am learning more about Iowa with each project that we do, which allows me to better represent it when we're doing projects.
Well, Molly Rideout, thank you so much for sharing that with us today.
You're welcome.
Molly Rideout is a writer and co-director of the Grin City Collective in Grinnell. And Tom Stancliffe, before I let you go,
sure.
We had someone who couldn't stay on the line who called in earlier from Audubon. Pam said public art was more common 20 years ago, and she says she's glad to see it making a comeback. And I'm not sure if that's true or not, but do you feel like this is a movement that's growing right now?
I do. It sort of defies even kind of upturns and downturns in the economy. You know, I think, you know, all these communities have started miscellaneous arts initiatives of all kinds. Even small communities are trying to do sculptural public art projects, doing murals, doing, you know, more festivals and things. And part of it, I think, is just driven by everyone recognizes the economic benefit of it. But I think people in general are finding a value in having this art in their communities.
Do you feel like this is something that comes and goes with time, or are we just on a steady incline? Are we just moving forward?
My perception is we're on a steady incline. We're continuing to move forward. I think it's becoming a kind of a more sophisticated world out there, and I think, you know, visually, and I think that's good.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being here today.
Great. Thank you very much, Charity.
Tom Stancliffe is a professor of art at the University of Northern Iowa. He's also a sculptor and leads UNI's Public Art Incubator. Talk of Iowa is produced by Emily Woodbury, Dennis Reese, Claire Roth, and Lindsay Moon. We had assistance today from Tony Daner, Jason Burns, and John Pemble. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.